After more than 20 years outside every Blues home game, St. Louis Game Time is bringing the coverage to you. It's almost always never easy, but this is Game Time AM with Brad Lee and Jeff Jones on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Just waking up, it's dark and early, and it is cold outside. 18 degrees at my house, 19 degrees at your place there, Jeff Jones?
Yeah, not that great.
I thought it was supposed to be close to spring. Holy cow.
It is apparently, I just pulled up the old 7-day forecast here because as I pull up the text inbox, there's a text like a leftover from last night claiming it was supposed to snow 5 inches on Saturday.
This coming Saturday?
Yeah, it's not. I think that in retrospect, that might have been some phallic humor. It scared me enough to look at the forecast.
Thank you. That's Matt Davis chuckling over there. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Brad.
So no game last night, but we've got a back-to-back tonight and tomorrow with the St. Louis Blues. They are in sunny Anaheim, California. It's not sunny right now.
By the way, I did not get Instagram story of Disneyland, but they were at a marina yesterday. So thank you, Joel Edmondson, for being reliable at documenting your vacation.
They're hanging out at the marina, at the pier.
Yeah, it appeared that there were yachts, there were boats. I don't know if Cam's boat was parked out there.
You think they were at Newport Beach?
Possibly. That would make some sense.
Yeah.
That's better than a Lumineers concert, right?
It
can't be any worse.
Unless the Lumineers are there, and that's why they're there. Right.
The Lumineers are out on a yacht.
It could be. You never know.
So if it was a private yacht showing, I'd probably be okay with that.
And here is Joel Edmondson and Zach Sanford and Jordan Schmaltz at the beach on long skateboards, tooling around.
Did you see? They had a nice filter where it was kind of sepia tone.
It is indeed Newport. Yeah, thanks, Joel.
There you go. So if you've got money in Southern California, you're going to the water and you're going to see boats, you're going to be in Newport Beach. I just kind of know that for some reason. So we don't have a lot to talk about from leftover from Monday night's win that they're probably still reveling in. You know, it's kind of hard probably not to celebrate that kind of win over the team chasing you in the playoffs, and it's a big physical game and it feels like a playoff game. And you don't really have to travel anywhere because, you know, you're just going across town from downtown Los Angeles to the suburbs of Anaheim, California. So they had some time off to enjoy some Southern California weather yesterday.
There are some great places to get tacos for sure.
Oh, yeah.
They probably had some nicer restaurants than that. If you're a Top Chef fan, one of the winners of Top Chef has his restaurant in West LA. Enjoyed that a whole lot. I don't know if we're going to be able to generate some sponsorship dollars out of a West LA hotspot, but you know.
You never know. So is there anything left over from Monday night's win you think we need to talk about? Do you think we might see any lineup changes tonight versus Monday?
Well, we know we will. The Blues skated yesterday afternoon, and Yo said that Dmitri Ashkin will not play this evening in Anaheim.
After getting his face smashed in by the back of Robert Bortuzzo.
Yes. So we can expect almost certainly Zach Sanford to be in the lineup this evening in Anaheim.
For his second game as a St. Louis Blue. Yeah. After the Shattenkirk trade.
You know, eventually we're gonna have to stop believing them when they make trades with Washington and they say the players are really important because he had the Phoenix Copley experience and now poor Zach Sanford can't get in the lineup. And believe I don't think Zach Sanford is in the Phoenix Copley pile, not even close, but it is funny that they make these deals with Washington twice and both times we hear about the importance of the players they get back and they don't seem to care to play them.
Well, you know, young goalie, young power forward that weighs less than 200 pounds. You know, it's a different situation.
But apparently
sure.
He's a rad longboarder.
And there you go. a rad longboarder?
Well, I mean...
Was he gleaming in the cube?
It's beach talk, right? Aren't you supposed to say that? I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably works.
Have you been to Muscle Beach?
Personally, no.
It makes you want to talk like a moron, I guess. I don't know.
I guess. So we're kind of laid back here the first hour. We've got a few things to talk about. The 6 o'clock hour of Game Time AM is going to be a little more hectic. So if you want to get in on the phone lines, the text line, if you want to tweet at us, if you want to email us, here's what you do. Pick up your phone, dial 855-282-8255. You can call in. You can text in. Weigh in on what you think is going to happen tonight with the St. Louis Blues, the Anaheim Ducks, or tomorrow night at San Jose, what you think the importance of this, you know, the next two nights is going to be for the Blues and their hunt for the playoffs. It feels like they have some breathing room. Is that a good thing or bad thing? Because they could have a little bit of a mental letdown knowing that they beat the Kings and they have a little bit of breathing room in the standings, right?
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to expect either this evening or tomorrow night one of those games that that make you roll your eyes a little bit. Not that the team is going to be all the way relaxed and not committed to the rest of this road trip, but look, we said the other day that for this trip to be a success, they probably needed to generate 3 points in these three games, and they got two in LA the other night. So the trip, I think, is already off on the right foot. Now, there's also an argument to be made that they'll use that to generate more momentum and sort of push through it, but you know, they're on a 5-game winning streak now, and we've talked about this team goes in streaks, and you know, when five lose five has sort of been the habit around here.
Yeah. I hope there's not a letdown because, you know, they've put themselves in a poor position and they've really had to fight and claw the last, you know, week to get these five wins in a row. To go backwards and start another losing streak or to really take a step back from the level of play that they've had. You know, and each game it seems like they're building a little bit. You know, we thought on Friday night they got a little bit lucky scoring with 20 seconds left to avoid overtime. They allowed two third-period goals on Saturday night to the Islanders and almost allowed a tying goal in the last flourish, the last frantic minute or two, and almost had overtime there. Then on Monday night, you know, they have a two-goal lead, and it goes 2-1, and there's a frantic finish. So it has been kind of the thing where they get out to a lead, and it's not like they're turtling. It's not like they're sending everybody, you know, keeping everybody in the defensive zone and sending one forechecker or zero forecheckers. They've actually been trying to play with a lead smartly. I mean, they're still trying to go in the offensive zone. They're still trying to spend time there instead of just kind of camping everybody in your own defensive zone and kind of saying it's the Alamo Duck.
Yeah, you haven't seen the same degree of going into the and going into the shell that you've seen from Blues teams past, but they, I mean, there is, and I wonder how much of it is just a sense of inevitability that comes from a history of watching the team play that way, right? If maybe we are seeing more and reading more into these late game problems than is actually there because we've seen so many Blues teams in the past kind of fall down that hole, but there is definitely, I think, a concern about whether or not they're sustaining pressure for full games. Text here from the 636. It's not really great for radio, but it did make me laugh. Nice picture of Daryl Sutter next to Sam the Eagle from the Muppets, making the exact same face.
Yeah.
So
I threw out someone on the Facebook page. Either I think the number one Blues Lounge or TMA fan page, I'm not sure which. They put that post up as a comparison for Daryl Sutter and Sam the Eagle. I responded with the guy from the Keystone Bitter Beer commercial from back in the day.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
That guy that makes the bitter beer face looks a heck of a lot like Daryl Sutter.
You think Daryl Sutter knows how to get a hold of Brian Sutter? Because the Blues apparently don't, because he just keeps not showing up to things.
Well, apparently, last time he was in town, he was angling for a job. He did come to the alumni game. He was one of the coaches at the alumni game. And apparently when he was in town for Adam Oates and Brett Hull night, maybe he might have hung around and said, "Hey, you got any jobs?" And the Blues said no. He said, "Okay, I guess I'll go back to the farm."
It was a little awkward that he was not there for Bobby Plager night. It was strange.
Well, you know, it gets cold up there in Western Canada on the farm, and maybe he was just
probably warmer there today than it is here.
Maybe we should check that. You know, global warming is warm. Global warming is really weird. You know, you don't know what the effect is going to be. It could be 70 degrees in February and 18 degrees in March. You never
know. I have no idea where Daryl Sutter's farm or where Brian Sutter's farm is, but it is 24 degrees in Saskatoon right now. So it is slightly warmer in Saskatoon.
It is warmer in Saskatoon than in St. Louis, Missouri. That's global warming for you. We mentioned if you want to get involved on the Twitter, we're at ST Louis Game Time. We're at stlouisgametime.com. Or you can email us. What's our email address again? GameTimeAM590@gmail.com. GameTimeAM590@gmail.com. We will have one of our recurring segments earlier than normal today. The Bad Blues Lounge post today will be in the 6 o'clock or the 5 o'clock hour here before we get to 6 o'clock, because 6 o'clock is busy. At the top of the hour at 6 o'clock, we're going to talk to a filmmaker who has made a documentary about the California Golden Seals, actually a sponsor of the show right now. So kind of an interesting situation. We'll have him on live from California. He'll be dialing in at 4 a.m. local time in California. That's dedication, really. Really wants to be a part of the show and willing to get up and be on the radio at 4 a.m. in California. I don't really have a good explanation on why he wants to do that, but he does. So
well, maybe it's
we'll welcome him on.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, I watched the movie last night, so maybe he's still dealing with PTSD from the Charlie Finley era.
Yeah,
the pounds of paint with the white skates.
Oh man, we'll get to that.
Why couldn't they just buy white skates?
I don't know. Probably because nobody, unless you want to buy figure skates, probably nobody makes them at the time.
Yeah, but if you're ordering them in large quantities, they'd make them, right? Like.
Charlie Finley was weird, but I think he was also a little bit frugal sometimes. So maybe that was it. So then at the bottom of the hour, 6:30, we will be talking to someone we'll call Louis the Third. So the third person to don the Louis mascot costume. He will be dialing in live on Game Time AM to talk about what it's like to be the giant blue pantsless bear. Maybe we can have him confirm or deny that Louis is actually a rat trying to pretend to be a bear. I don't know.
Why doesn't he wear pants?
I don't know.
There are so many mascots that wear pants.
I know.
Bears, I guess, don't tend to, but I don't understand.
Fred Bird is probably the trendsetter for mascots in St. Louis sports. Fred Bird does not actually wear pants.
You know, the mascot of the Washington Capitals, Slapshot the Eagle, has a full uniform. Hockey pants included, and he drives out onto the ice on a quad runner before every game.
Well, and you know, when we had a football team here, Rampage the Ram wore football pants.
Yeah, that's true.
So he bucked the trend of St. Louis mascots.
Was that a Ram rule? Was wearing pants a Ram rule?
Sack. Sorry. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So busy 6 o'clock hour with different guests calling in and talking about Golden Seals hockey from back in the day in the 70s in Oakland, California, and what it's like to be a professional hockey mascot. So,
and by the way, if you are a mascot fan and a Christopher Guest fan, his newest movie is called Mascots, and it's on Netflix. It is not maybe at the level of the previous, you know, Best in Show and Waiting for Guffman and A Mighty Wind. Not necessarily on that level, but certainly enough laughs, worth a watch. We're talking mascots.
You know, the depth and breadth of Game Time AM is really on showcase today, and in some of our upcoming shows that we're lining up. Later today, we're going to be talking to Dave Schultz, who's a state senator from Sullivan, Missouri. He was in Jeff City yesterday with the Blues, talking to the state lawmakers in a committee meeting about securing some public funding for Scott Trade Center upgrades. And during the hearing, it turns out it looks like the Blues have met with Governor Eric Greitens, who really, I mean, I think even before he was sworn in, put his foot down and said no money for sports stadiums.
Well, I don't know if he put his foot down or if he put it in his mouth, because I think that Greitens is among the let's call it the bombastic crowd who doesn't seem to have much of a strong relationship to, how am I going to put this?
I'm trying to call him
Trumpy
yourself.
And not use the word Trumpy.
Yeah.
That, you know, Greitens wore cowboy boots to the White House. He lives in the Central West End.
Is there a Chuck's Boots near the Central West End?
Probably. Aren't there many Chuck's Boots?
We love
Chuck's Boots.
Yeah, you have to around here, but I think, you know, if he wants to represent rural Missouri, then wearing cowboy boots to the White
House. He lives on Euclid. What are we talking about?
Are you saying there's no? What if the Cardinal Cowboy lives on Euclid? Are you saying that's impossible?
He
probably lives in Jefferson.
There are a number of jokes that flashed across my brain right there in a real big hurry.
Yeah.
But
it's fine. You know, look, hey, cowboy boots is, you know, that's a life decision.
And maybe he has flat feet and he needs the boots for proper arch support.
Or he wanted to be a little bit taller in person. Who knows?
Or he wants to convince dumb Hoosiers to vote for him.
That was not where I was expecting this conversation to go, I got to tell you. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis. We're on 590 AM, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. We'll have the audio up on InsideSTL, and you can subscribe to the podcast audio on iTunes or the Google Play Store or any of the podcast apps that might be on your phone. And we appreciate if you're subscribing and listening later in the day when the sun is out and it's not 18 degrees outside. So are there any other lessons to be learned from the Kings game? I think it'll be interesting to see if Jordan Schmaltz gets in the lineup anytime soon, what the usage is for Robert Bortuzzo. You know, we've been looking at the ice time of the defenders since Shattenkirk was traded. Colton Parayko's definitely on the uptick. I think we said he played about, 24 minutes on Monday night?
He was down a little on Monday. I think he played the 24 the previous against Colorado, rather.
So it'll be interesting to see how they work that defensive rotation. And there was a time where Carl Gunnarsson would play and Bortuzzo would sit. And if Bortuzzo would play, Gunnarsson would sit. And then, you know, they've been on the ice at the same time. And now it looks like Bortuzzo and Edmondson are a little bit more of a pair. I kind of wonder, you know, and I think we've talked a little bit about this before, the offensive upside of Joel Edmondson.
Well, I'd have to look, but recently, I mean, it's been Edmondson and Parayko have been paired together.
But they were Bortuzzo and Gunnarsson. When Parayko was hurt, that's what I'm thinking about the other night. So, in a perfect world, what do you think the defensive rotation would be? If you're in charge of the Blues defense, what would you make the rotation?
If I were in charge of the Blues defense, I would probably be rolling Petrangelo, Edmondson, and then Bomeister Parayko. I like the Petrangelo Edmondson pairing. I think they play well together. I think you will see Bomeister Petrangelo Edmondson Parayko, and then Bortuzzo Gunnarsson as your third pairing. But I like the Edmondson Petrangelo pairing, and so I would make the adjustments necessary to explore that.
So if you want to get Jordan Schmaltz in the lineup, would you sit Gunnarsson or?
It's hard to say because
you can't just let him sit in the press box the rest of the season, right? I mean,
well, there are 15 games remaining. Is that right? 15?
I think so.
So of those 15, I would set the over under pending injury at the number of games that Jordan Schmaltz plays at 6.5, and I would probably take the under.
Yeah, I would take the under too for sure, especially if he's not seeing the ice in some of these games where maybe it's not. You know, they've got a little bit of breathing room.
And I think Bortuzzo has helped himself out because for all of the things that we've pointed out that have been failings in his game recently, he has also been productive. He's generated some offense. So I think that we have seen Bortuzzo taking steps to keep himself in the lineup. And, you know, like I said, Schmaltz, we haven't seen him enough to know what he has. He hasn't really had the opportunity to put himself into the lineup. He hasn't done anything that would make you think he needs to be out, but he hasn't been really given the opportunity with consistent playing time and in the situations where you'd be able to really measure his game to know what he has right now.
I think it'll be I think tonight will be a tough game against the Ducks, and it should be some tough decisions in the lineup on defense. You know, I don't think you can have these young kids, these younger players you've called up or that you've recently acquired, like a Zach Sanford, sitting for extended periods of time, that you need to keep them involved and not let them get too down. I wonder how the treatment of Ty Ratty earlier in the season, where he was just in the press box, in the press box, in the press box, and didn't really get a good shot at breaking the lineup very often. That had to be demoralizing and affect his level of play.
I would think so, but then, you know, it's interesting because we talk about these lineup decisions. There were comments after the game in Colorado that the team had had a team meeting in Colorado, and they came out of that meeting with the decision that they were going to be playing a veteran-heavy lineup. I don't really know what that means. I don't know why, if you're playing a veteran-heavy lineup. I mean, Dmitri Yashkin has nearly 200 games in the NHL at this point, so I guess maybe he's a veteran. But Yashkin was included in that, you know, in that veteran-heavy rotation. So I guess that was the decision. I don't really understand it, and I'm not sure that it was the best decision. I don't know how the team comes to that, but that's the rationale, at least.
Because it's a rebuilding year, right?
Well, and setting aside whether or not it's a rebuilding year, play your best players is the decision. I don't understand why does the conversation have to be more complicated than that?
Well, you have to arrive there somewhere. And if you're saying that your best chance to win and make the playoffs is by playing Carl Gunnarsson over Jordan Schmaltz,
if that is true. And look, Gunnarsson, for all of his general blandness, is fine as a 5-6 defenseman. If Jordan Schmaltz at this point is not a more useful player than Robert Bortuzzo, especially since the Blues have traded the player that runs their power play, then you don't have anything with Jordan Schmaltz. I mean, if Schmaltz can't beat out Bortuzzo at this point with this opportunity, he's right-handed, he runs the power play. If you still think that Bortuzzo is a better player and a more useful player for your lineup, then Jordan Schmaltz is just nothing, and he's not going to be worth the effort. The same deal, I think, with Zach Sanford. If you wanted Sanford included in that deal, and he can't get in the lineup over Yakupov, let alone Yashkin, because the other night when Stastny was sick, Yakupov played and not Sanford.
Yeah. How much are we going to see Nail Yakupov the rest of the season? Do you think it's just a change of pace, or if someone's injured, or do you think... I would imagine at this point, they know what he is, they know what he's going to do. He probably does not fit the mold of a Mike Yeo player very well.
And he doesn't fit the mold of an NHL player very well.
Okay, that's fair. I was trying to be polite, but yeah, we could say that. I mean, I don't know. I understand the little bit of gamble. You know, you didn't give up a lot. You're not paying him terribly much. I think, what, 2.5?
Yeah, so yeah. At the time, the deal makes to me all the sense in the world, because you give up a player who's probably never going to play in the NHL, and a conditional draft pick for basically a lotto ticket, right? For a guy who was drafted first overall within the last 5 years, who clearly has speed to burn, who has, you know, a skill instinct, but he has no other instincts. And I mean, it just doesn't work with Nail Yakupov.
Yeah, it's a shame, because he does have some physical tools, but putting it together, you know, being a fast skater is not the end-all, be-all. Ask anyone who watched Jamal Mayers play.
Well, and we had a texter compare him to old Luis Mendoza of the Mighty Ducks a couple last week, I guess. And I can only wish he was that useful. Maybe if we set up a pyramid of cans for Nail Yakupov to sort of work on stopping in front of, he would find his confidence.
Maybe. So tonight, the Blues are in Anaheim. The Ducks were just in town on Friday night. Do you think there's any carryover playing this close together? I mean, they've had a couple games in between. The Ducks might be a little fired up for this game. I think that was probably a game they thought they could have won.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of a fluky goal late from Bortuzzo to Edmondson.
Well, the Ducks had a big win on Sunday night. They played the Capitals at home and beat them 5-2. So they, you know, that's...
Who isn't beating the Capitals these days, though?
Well, the Wild, as of last night.
That's true. We'll get to the standings and the scores last night here in a minute. I think Corey Perry might take someone's head off. Do you think that's a fair prediction, that he might just two-handed swing and try to decapitate someone?
Yeah, that might be what Robert Bortuzzo ends up being useful for this evening, I guess. But no, for beating him back, at least, right?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see the reaction of the Ducks, because, you know, they have the home game. We should note, by the way, that John Gibson, after coming back to play in that game against the Blues on Friday, was not even on the bench. He was scratched for the game on Sunday. Bernier played it and Roth backed up. So Gibson may or may not be back in that this evening.
Is that injury or is that performance related?
Well, it's possible that they were planning to play Bernier either way, and so they didn't like it didn't matter to them to have Gibson on the bench. You saw last year, for example, when the Blues were sort of rotating through three goalies, they would have, you know, when they had Anders Nilsson, they would when they would scratch Elliott for games that Allen played somewhat frequently. So it's the same kind of deal, I think, in Anaheim right now.
I think, you know, Corey Perry is kind of he's the lightning rod for the Ducks. Either you love him or you hate him. And if you're in St. Louis, you probably hate him. I kind of respect his game. He's definitely kind of a throwback player where he's pretty hard-nosed. He can shoot the puck pretty well. He's a dangerous scorer. Him and Getzlaf playing together are a pretty lethal combination pretty often. But he does have a little bit of a reputation as being a cheap shot artist.
Yeah, maybe that's definitely true.
Maybe a borderline dirty player.
Well, and you know, look, the Blues have had limited exposure to the Ducks, right? We've never played the Blues have never played a playoff series against Anaheim, so we haven't really had that sort of long chance to really hate Corey Perry
Close and personal,
right? So he's fine. He's a good hockey player. It would be nice if he played for the Blues. I mean, that's about how I feel for him. But I can certainly you can certainly see where he would agitate if you had to see him a lot.
On the Twitters on Friday night, there were some curse words flying around about Corey Perry. Corey Blank and Perry, I think, is what I saw a couple different times.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, that was perhaps the most shining moment in the history of the new Winnipeg Jets was the playoff series against Anaheim when the crowd chanted Katy Perry in unison at Corey Perry and held up signs with pictures of Katy Perry, like big fat heads all throughout the crowd.
And then who won that series?
Not the Jets. I don't think they won a game, in fact. I'm pretty sure they got swept.
I'm pretty sure the history of that franchise dating back to the Atlanta Thrashers, they've never won a playoff game, unfortunately. Sorry, Keith Tkachuk, if you're listening early. So we're coming up here on 5:30 this morning here in St. Louis. It is still dark and cold outside. You're listening Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis, 590 AM, 105.7 HD2, and streaming live on InsideSCL.com. I've got that stuff down. I can just rattle it off like that.
It's helpful that it's on the mic flag because it's right in front of your face.
I wasn't even looking at it though. Don't try to say I'm reading.
No. I read the mic flag.
And I can even say 855-282-8255 without even looking at anything now. So I may be a word herder as we drop sometimes with Matt Davis over there across the table, but
I just realized we're really close to the phone number being 855 Duck Talk. It's not quite there because the D.
Don't confuse the folks.
If you try to type in Duck Talk, but you need the D to be a B.
I wonder who you get a hold of if you do dial Duck Talk though.
That's a pretty good question. We should do that at the break.
See who the mystery guest is here coming up.
Maybe that's a new segment. What we'll do is we'll just start dialing our number, but one number off from the studio, and see who we get.
That's a dangerous proposition, my friend. At least we don't have a 900 number to call in. That'd be worse. Potentially, allegedly. Is there anything else you're looking forward to tonight? Sleep would be nice too. I'm definitely feeling it today.
I'm looking forward to the game being postponed due to a blizzard in Anaheim and replayed as a matinee this weekend.
As is happening in the northeast part of the country. Who do you think starts in goal tonight? And who do you think starts in goal in San Jose tomorrow?
I suspect it will be Jake Allen this evening, Carter Hutton tomorrow night.
What's the difference?
I think that, again, we talked about the need to get X number of points out of this road trip. My guess would be that...
Get him as fast as you can.
Yes. If you strapped Mike Yeo down and you hit him with the truth serum, he would probably also say that three in these three games was the really like the bare minimum. Here's what we have to get. So, yes, you get them while the getting's good.
If he pitches a shutout or plays really, really well again like he did in Los Angeles on Monday, are you tempted at all to start him two nights on the road traveling from Anaheim to San Jose? Are you tempted at all to give him the second start, knowing that Carter Hutton on Saturday night probably did not have his best effort of the season?
I am not tempted to do that because I think you need to get Hutton back out there to get a sort of rebound game from the other night, and you have to keep Hutton involved because Jake has been much better since the coaching change.
But don't burn him out.
And I'm also like, I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with Jake and for him to go into one of those spirals where he's given up 4 goals on 17 shots.
It's
the 3 games in a row.
It's the St. Louis Blues. Why would you expect that?
Right. So you got to keep Hutton fresh and involved. So when the S hits the fan, we are ready to go with the backup if we have to.
When the S hits the fan.
I'm saying we a lot this morning. I don't usually do that.
I never do. I got to tell you.
Every time I say it, I feel myself saying it. I go, that's strange. Don't do that.
I have trained myself pretty well not to say we in terms of talking about the hockey team. I am not on the payroll.
No.
I'm not an employee of the St. Louis Blues. They are a distinct entity. I know that several fans will say we because they feel like they're part of the thing.
Right.
They buy tickets. It's a
collective.
But when you get down to it, it's us and them.
Right.
So
isn't it supposed to be an adversarial relationship?
Because we're part of the mainstream media.
Isn't that how media functions in a free society, Brad?
I guess. That's how it's supposed to be. So let's talk about the standings and scores last night. So a couple games of interest. Washington was at home hosting Minnesota. Washington got the 4-2 victory. So the Wild did not. So wait, does that mean, so then Chicago was at Montreal?
Yes.
Chicago won 4-2.
Yes, it means what you think it means.
So if you load the standings, that means we have a new first place team in the Western Conference in the Central Division, and that would be the lovely Chicago Blackhawks.
I tweeted this last night, and it was a mildly lukewarm take, but I'll stand by it. I think that last night was the night that Chicago passes the Wild and stays ahead of the Wild.
So Chicago has 93 points. Minnesota has 92. Minnesota does have a game in hand. So
they do,
if you look at last 10, the Chicago Blackhawks over the last 10 games, 8-2-0, 8 wins, 2 losses, no charity points. The Minnesota Wild are 4-6-0 in their last 10.
The thing is,
that's a bad trend.
All of the pressure in the world is going to start piling on that Minnesota team. You have the Wild, who have not been able to break through, especially against Chicago. You have Bruce Boudreaux, who's dying to win a round in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You have all of that pressure piling on at once, and in the meantime, the Blackhawks can't stop winning.
Do you think Bruce Boudreaux gave up Haagen-Dazs for Lent?
I don't think you could get Bruce Boudreaux to come by and toss for anything.
I don't think you could either. He probably had a big tub of it last night to console himself falling out of first place.
Now, granted, the Wild are lucky in that their next game is at Carolina, so that's a nice way to get off the schneid, maybe.
Chicago's next game is at Ottawa, so they're both on the East Coast swing or Eastern Conference swing. Their next games are tomorrow night. Nashville did not play. Their next game is at Washington. So all three of the teams ahead of the Blues in the Central Division are on Eastern Conference trips right now. They all play tomorrow night, Thursday. Chicago at Ottawa, Minnesota at Carolina, Nashville at Washington. Now, ahead of the Blues also in the wild card standing, Edmonton, they play Dallas. Dallas is just rolling over and playing dead now.
Yeah, they're donezo.
Last night, Edmonton hosted Dallas. They won 7-1. 7 goals scored on the Dallas Stars. Who was in net for that game? I'm gonna have to click that and find out because I'm curious.
I believe Kari Lehtinen started. And I take a lot of things by osmosis because I follow the beat guys for like every team in the division, and so I see the lineups every day, and I don't ever.
Both Dallas goaltenders played last night.
Well, I'm sure, right.
let's see. Antti Niemi faced 20 shots. He made 15 saves, so he allowed 5 goals.
Okay, so Niemi started last night.
And then Lehtinen came in. He played 20. So Niemi played 31.5 minutes, and Lehtinen played 28.5 minutes, so almost a pretty close 50-50. Lehtinen only faced 9 shots, allowed 2 goals, so 7 saves on 9 shots. Maybe Edmonton had dialed it back and really weren't pressing late in the game. So that is horrible. You know, the Oilers got out to a lead. Benoit Pouliot, is that
Pouliot?
Pouliot.
Benoit Pouliot.
Oscar Klefbom, Darnell Nurse all scored before the Stars got on the board. Brett Ritchie And then David Desharnais.
David Desharnais.
Desharnais, Patrick Maroon from St. Louis, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Connor McDavid finishing out the scoring. So
I was, and I was sort of, I was tracking that game last night a little bit as well, because for a brief moment, Patrick Kane had taken over the league lead in scoring before Connor McDavid scored that goal at the end of the game to tie him again last night.
Ah, that's why he's pressing late in the game to score right at 6-1. That's interesting. And you don't think they pay attention to that kind of stuff?
I would be fairly surprised to discover that Connor McDavid knew that Patrick Kane had put up 3 points or whatever last night. But
are you serious?
During the game, I would be surprised to find out that McDavid was tracking Patrick Kane's scoring.
But Chicago was in Montreal, so it was an earlier game, and Edmonton was at home, so there's a very good chance.
Well, actually, I guess that
timing of the
fair
game. Yeah, it's not like the they're playing at the same fair time.
Right.
So Edmonton's next game is also Thursday night. They're at home hosting the Boston Bruins. So the Blues are still in the second wild card spot, so eighth in the conference. They have 77 points. They are 3 behind Edmonton, and they are only 2 behind Nashville. So, and then, you know, if you want to look at the rest of the standings here real quick, San Jose still leads the Pacific with 91. Calgary is kind of stuck there at 82 points, so, you know, 9 points back.
Well, and if we're talking opportunities, Nashville is in Washington tomorrow night. That's a hard place to play. The Blues have a game in hand. They're playing this evening. I mean, this is a game where the Blues win tonight and they pass Nashville in the standings because the Blues have the tiebreaker.
So it comes down to, do you want to stay in the wild card position and play the Chicago Blackhawks? Would you like to catch Edmonton and play San Jose in the first round? Or would you like to try to bump up to that third spot and play Minnesota if that's how it plays out?
I will say, with the way that the math looks with the standings, it's probably not very likely that they would be in the first wild card spot. Because if they caught Edmonton, they would also catch Nashville.
Right.
Almost certainly. So it will probably be Edmonton or Anaheim, because Edmonton's only a point behind Anaheim. One of those Pacific teams in the first wild card spot, and then the Central team in the second.
So really, Chicago, Minnesota, and San Jose have really gotten out to enough leads.
Which means, by the way, that all 4 first-round series in the Western Conference would all be divisional, because you'd have the top wildcard team playing the bottom wildcard team. That would be a Central-Central matchup. And then the same with the Pacific.
Which is what the NHL wants, I think, because they want to build on those rivalries that are born during playoff struggles. And if you're talking about division teams facing division teams in the playoffs, that's where the bad blood really comes
from. And, you know, look, from a selfish perspective, I don't hate that there are no more playoff games in the first round that start at 9:30 in Vancouver.
But you could still see Blues Wild start at 8:30 on a
They'll definitely get hosed. They'll get the very late network starts. I mean, yeah, you saw those last year where the Chicago Blackhawks, arguably, you know, one of the top 3 probably draws for NBC, still got the 8:30 starts or whatever.
It's not bad. I understand the idea of making sure that fans can watch every single playoff game. So you stagger the start times, you build in a couple extra days there, here and there, so that you don't have games being played at exactly the same time. There's a little bit of overlap sometimes, especially in the first round when you've got so many teams still alive. But it does really paint you in a corner as, okay, so if we don't have teams out on the West Coast, then we're going to have central time zone teams playing later at night. Just so people make sure that everybody has exposure on TV. I get that.
Well, but it affects the game, because the players have a defined routine that has to change substantially when the game starts 90 minutes later than it does at any other point during the season.
And fans have a routine too, and they have to go to work for the most part.
Right.
And yeah. So
yeah, if you have a game that starts at 8:30 and the game goes into overtime, you're talking about games that end at 12:30 or whatever. You know, I mean, that can happen. Games end after midnight local time.
The league is almost in a no-win situation in the first round, where you either try to make all of the games watchable for the fans, which is a good effort, and I think comes from a decent point of view, even if it's you're trying to maximize your ad revenue and commercial exposure, that you're having people watch as many games as possible and getting ratings.
Right. And that's the reason, because realistically, like,
you're saying they're not doing it for the fans, that the fans can watch all the games?
How many fans in St. Louis are really going to watch the Ottawa Boston series in the first round?
Probably the people in this room, and some of the people getting up early or podcasting on Inside STL or on iTunes or on Google Play Store.
I mean, that's true. I guess we probably have a self-selecting audience of people that was more likely to watch the Ottawa-Boston series.
But generally speaking, St. Louis is not going to be a hotbed for some of those playoff early rounds. Yeah, that's for sure.
And when you see those ratings books come out for national broadcast, St. Louis is consistently in the top 3 to 5 markets. But
well, you know, that are you saying that we're? I mean,
I'm
are
saying,
you
saying
that St. Louis is a hockey town.
I'm saying that there's not enough money in St. Louis for advertisers to care.
All right, fair enough. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2, InsideSTL.com. I'm Brad. That's Jeff over there. Matt's kind of quiet this morning. You gonna chime in, Matt?
Yeah, I'll chime in.
Matt's cold.
Well, it is.
I am cold.
It's cold outside.
Everyone's
sure.
cold.
I'm feeling a little extra tired today, so
yeah,
I don't know what the deal is.
Because it's Wednesday, right? It's the drag point in the week.
Probably because it's Wednesday.
Hump day, so
exactly
you
it.
Get down yep. on the downward slope and coast to the weekend.
Yeah.
Plus, it's the Ides of March.
What does that mean, by the way?
That goes back to Caesar, right? That was
beware the Ides.
Yeah,
of
it was that was when Caesar was stabbed.
Ide.
I don't know.
There's
it's
a
Roman.
Song. Yeah, there's a song about it. I hit the Google machine.
Allow me to quickly Wikipedia Ides of March,
and then after
I think it initiated with Shakespeare. I think that's a Shakespearean phrase.
Blues Anaheim stat of the day.
Yeah.
Blues lost 10 in a row on the road in Anaheim before winning their 2-1 in overtime back on January 16th. So
they lost 10 in a row?
10 in a row in the Honda Center.
The pond across the street from the Anaheim Angels, and the Anaheim of Los Angeles mm-hmm. of California Angels, and just down the street from Disneyland.
Yes, it is, in fact, one big street.
Are you serious that we didn't see any photos from Disneyland yesterday on Instagram?
I mean, not from Joel Edmondson, at least. I did not see any Blues Instagram photos of Disneyland.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Ides, by the way. Yeah. The Romans did not number days of a month sequentially from the first through the last. Instead, they counted back from 3 fixed points. The Nones, or the Nuns, perhaps, on the 5th or 7th, depending on the length of the month. The Ides, which were on the 13th or 15th, and the Calends, which is the first of the following month. Usually, the Ides occur near the midpoint on the 13th for most months, but on the 15th for March, May, July, and October.
So beware the middle of the month. That's what that means. That doesn't seem that scary.
Well, it's because Caesar was stabbed at the Ides, so that's why you beware the Ides, because it's bad luck.
Okay.
Seems like a pretty benign thing to be bewaring of.
So now
it was like the overthrow of the Roman Empire. That's pretty big.
Yeah, that's kind of big.
Before we get to Matt Davis, be ready for our Bad Blues Lounge post today here in a second. We had a trivia question yesterday.
We did.
Do we know if it was claimed last night?
It was claimed last night.
That is awesome. We're 2 for 2.
Yeah, we're continuing to claim. Yeah, the answer, by the way, to
what was the question?
The question. Yeah, the answer to the question. The question was. Which NHL player set the record for most goals by a rookie with 76 in the 1990s?
I have a guess.
Yeah.
Was it Timu?
It was indeed Timu Solani.
Nice.
I did not look that up, by the way.
Themed because, you know, Ducks. Granted, he was playing for Winnipeg at the time, but played for the Ducks primarily, most notably.
Most notably. He was also a Colorado Avalanche for a short time.
And a Paul Shark.
Kariya. He was a Shark.
Paul Kariya spent 1 year together in San Jose. They went as a tandem. Or no, they spent a year together in Colorado as a tandem.
Yeah.
Maybe Solani might have been by himself as a Shark. Actually.
I don't think Kariya went to San
Jose. I think you're right.
That might have been around the time that Kariya came here and made his illustrious contributions to St. Louis Blues.
By the way, he had one really good season here, for the record.
And then he kind of got concussed and
there were other
decided
things
to hang
bad.
It up that his brain.
But his first season here, he did score 65 points. Like, it was a pretty good season.
That's really good
indeed,
for St. Louis Blues.
Indeed, Paul Kariya did not ever play in San Jose. Okay. Anaheim, Colorado, Nashville, St. Louis.
See, now, I forget that Timu Solani was a Shark for a short time, and I do forget that Paul Kariya was a Predator for a short time. And probably people elsewhere are like, wait, Paul Kariya was with the St. Louis Blues? So, you know.
Timu Solani played 3 years in San Jose.
I must have been asleep those 3 years.
He was traded there in 2000, traded there from Anaheim, and played the end of the 2002, the 2001 season, and then 2001-02, 2002-03 as a San Jose Shark.
See, I kind of think my hockey memories, there's that season-long gap when they didn't play for some reason. because of a lockout.
Yep.
Because the NHL never has lockouts. And so some of that like pre-lockout stuff, I think, got scrubbed out of the memory banks with the year-long not playing hockey.
So maybe. Speaking of the lockout,
yeah,
notable Blues players in that 04-05 lockout played for the Missouri River Otters. Mm-hmm. Jamal Mayers played there, Bryce Salvador played there, and Barrett Jackman played there.
Wait. Go back. Who do you think?
Mayers, Salvador, and Jackman were River Otters.
Ryan Johnson. But I don't know if Bryce Salvador did.
I thought he did. I don't know. We can Google. But
no, I actually went to a couple of those games. Yeah. I know I saw Ryan Johnson and Barrett Jackman on the ice, and Ryan Johnson was like a star. I mean, he was faster than everybody on the ice, and he could finish when he was playing at that level. Is that the U.S. Hockey League, I believe?
It is, and Bryce Salvador did indeed play for the Missouri River Otters.
Okay, well, I saw Jamal Mayers in the stands. I don't know if Jamal Mayers actually suited up.
If we're believing Wikipedia, after the NHL lockout in 04-05, NHL defenseman Barrett Jackman decided to stay in St. Louis and play for the River Otters during the lockout, along with center Ryan Johnson, defenseman Bryce Salvador, and right winger Jamal Mayers.
Okay, so they all did. Okay.
Why are you
bringing that up?
I'm bringing that up because this weekend at the games on Friday night, I saw a gentleman wearing a Barrett Jackman River Otters jersey. And I thought to myself, all right, like that's pretty good.
That's pretty rare.
Saturday morning, I got up and went to Uncle Bill's and got breakfast. And there was, I'm pretty sure, a different gentleman also wearing a Barrett Jackman River Otters jersey.
Maybe not as rare as I thought.
That's right. So there were two different guys wearing Barrett Jackman River Otters jerseys within 12 hours of each other.
My favorite obscure jersey sighting at a Blues game was, it's been a few years now, I saw a gentleman walking in the concourse before a game wearing a Dennis Chassé jersey.
You know, it's funny. When we played, when I went to play trivia last weekend, when we had our first little trivia collection here, I tried to use old obscure Blues players as the names of my trivia roster.
Uh-huh.
You know, so we have some.
Did Dennis Chassé make the
Dennis
roster?
Dennis Chassé was the first one I used.
That's crazy. I made the joke on Twitter at the time when I saw someone wearing a Dennis Chassé jersey that even Dennis Chassé doesn't have a Blues jersey in his closet.
Well, so as we talk about Blues jerseys and, you know, guys like Dennis Chassé, I tweeted this on Friday night. I popped into the True Blues store there. We talked about our friends Ken and Brenna were in from Baltimore, so they wanted to get some team swag. We popped into the True Blues store, and hanging in the True Blue store since at least the Winter Classic was a game-used Joakim Lindstrom jersey.
Yeah.
It hung there for months because it was like $300, and no one wanted to spend that much money on a game-used Joakim Lindstrom jersey.
And?
It is now gone. So either...
Is it in your closet?
It is not in my closet.
Okay.
Either someone purchased it, or the team just reclaimed it and it's going to show up with the equipment sale this summer for like $20.
That could be.
So if you bought the Joakim Lindstrom jersey, get in touch with us because I would love to know more about your life.
855-282-8255. Yeah. Hey, Matt, push the button for the Bad Blues Lounge post of the day.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
All right, so just to make sure we're on the same page, there is a group on Facebook called The Blues Lounge, and they have some horrible posts. We can't see them because we've all been banned from The Blues Lounge because we're members of the TMA fan page, which kind of had a fan page war. There was some retribution over the banning of a certain producer of the 7 a.m. show, TMA. So people went over to The Blues Lounge and said, free Plowsy, and they came over and banned every single member of the TMA fan page. So you can't even see the Blues Lounge and ask to be a member. So we have spies. The resistance is real. So yesterday we asked, we didn't actually have any Blues posts in hand, Bad Blues Lounge posts in hand. And we kind of made an appeal to the masses, to our spies inside the Blues Lounge. And I got to tell you, the response we got was overwhelming. One gentleman sent me a 177-page PDF of Blues Lounge posts. 177 pages.
That's commitment right there.
I know. He asked me him to send me more. I said, "Oh no, I've got enough now for a little, at least the next 2 days."
Yeah.
So, but we've We've got one. We've got a couple here. So this first one, it's short and to the point. It was posted during the Kings game on Monday night. It's from a Justin, and Justin says, Bortuzzo just did the Blues a service. Thanks. And that was after Bortuzzo had taken Yaskin out of the game.
Yeah.
Celebrating a Blues player leaving a game for injury, and he says,
not
thanks.
Great, Bob.
The first comment I think is funny from a Brendan. He says, come on, man. But then someone responds with true. Man, the are the best Blues fans in the Blues Lounge, are they celebrating an injury to Dmitri Yaskin?
It would certainly seem that way. Setting aside like the general ugliness of celebrating somebody being injured who isn't Kirk Maltby,
or Chris Draper.
Yeah, there are a handful of guys who I'd be fist pumping quietly or not so quiet. Andrew Shaw was on that pile too. But like I don't know, it doesn't benefit the Blues to play short. Like set aside everything else, it does not benefit the team for the remainder of the game to be down a player.
Yeah, that's like,
use the brain a little bit.
Now, my wife is actually a member of the Blues Lounge. She has not been banned. She was a short-term member of TMA fan page. She got in a couple arguments with folks that went on, and I think she was a one-day member of TMA fan page before she removed herself. So she was not banned with everyone else. So she sent me one. I'm going to try to read this with the amount of punctuation that is included. I will have to take a couple breaths, but I will read it with the amount of punctuation. There are no capital letters except for Montreal Canadiens and Crawford. But here it goes. Did anyone watch the Hawks game tonight? One person got hurt, then Crawford, the goalie, was waiting for the puck to come. The puck came up and he almost got knocked out by one of the Montreal Canadiens. I think with Shea Weber, and he could never get a concussion, but he didn't because they made sure they did a concussion test. Hopefully he doesn't have long-term or short-term injuries. After that hit, at least he didn't break his goalie mask and also didn't get hurt. Did he awesome? He did awesome tonight. We won, and we were on top of the Minnesota Wild. Sorry, not sorry, Wild won. Wild, we won tonight, and you lost. Crawford had a shutout till like halfway of the third period. He did awesome and was very helpful. He helped us win. There are bad posts on Facebook from Blackhawks fans, too. We just want to make sure we give equal time, that there are Blackhawks fans who really don't know that much and want to get on a soapbox on Facebook and share their opinion.
And by the way, speaking of that exact incident, Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times, I think it's the Sun-Times, was going off on the concussion spotters last night because Crawford did take a Shea Weber slap shot square to the mask from about 15 feet out. Shockingly, fell backwards after taking the Shea Weber slap shot to the mask.
Yeah.
And didn't get checked, didn't get pulled. I mean, nothing.
You know, concussions. The NHL takes them seriously.
Doing? Like, what on earth?
The quiet room is quiet because no one's ever in it.
And Lazarus writes for the Sun-Times. That's a good thought.
Yeah. Okay, one more Bad Blues Lounge post today before we go to break and come back with our filmmaker friend in California. We've got one from EJ. He lives in Lake St. Louis, not far from my house. He says, I haven't watched a minute since they essentially gave up on the season and traded Shattenkirk. I understand it's better in the long run, but that makes the rest of the season less compelling for a fan like me who isn't a diehard. And then there's a comment about from someone named Justin saying, we're probably going to make the playoffs and the season was done when Fabry got hurt. Still, you never know. Yo beat a superior Blues team not that long ago. And EJ, who wrote the original post saying he was giving up on the season, said, well, after that win over the Kings, I still pay attention. I'll start making a point to make plans around games. So he's given up on the team. The team has given up on the season, yet he's going to make sure he plans his schedule around watching
it's
Blues games.
Almost as though he just wanted someone to pay attention to him.
It's a cry for attention.
Yeah.
That's the Blues Lounge, right?
Text, by the way, from a texter who was calling himself Reggie Dunlop, which I appreciate.
From Slapshot.
Yeah.
Coach Reg.
Says that we missed an ex-Blue who played on that River Otters team. Apparently, Jim Montgomery also played on that River Otters team.
You know what? He did. And I have, this is a really weird aside, there's a friend who went to one of the games where they do one of those jersey night. They wear a special jersey. I think it was the Valentine's one. So there were hearts all over a River Otters jersey. It was white with red hearts all over it, and then the Otters logo on the front. And they did an auction for jerseys after the game. I know someone who paid $400 for Jim Montgomery's Valentine's Day River Otters jersey. And when he got it from him, he said, hey, you paid $400 for my jersey? Well, let's go have a beer. So we ended up at Trailhead that night in downtown St. Charles on Main Street, drinking beer with Jim Montgomery, who could not believe that someone spent $400 on his special River Otters Valentine's Day jersey.
We talked about Ryan Johnson being the best player for the River Otters. So Jim
most highly skilled.
Jim Montgomery's hockey reference page, he had 34 points, 9 goals, and 122 NHL games.
Yeah.
When he was 35, playing for the River Otters in 04-05, 20 goals, 47 points in 42 games.
That's the U.S. Hockey League for some reason. You know, the River Otters were nice, but it's hard to get behind. It has been hard to get behind minor league hockey in St. Louis. You know, they made a go of it. They went under the St. Charles Chill. They lasted, what, one season, I think?
I believe you.
Yeah. So, and then there hasn't been much hockey at the Family Arena. There's
However.
Tell us hockey at Family Arena this weekend.
There is hockey at Family Arena this weekend. The NCAA Women's Frozen Four is at Family Arena this weekend. I know there are, I'm sure, plenty of still good seats available. It should actually be pretty entertaining hockey.
And affordable.
And affordable, yes. I believe the best seats in the building for all three games is like $50.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. The Frozen Four this year is it's the same four teams that were in the Frozen Four last year. You have Wisconsin, Minnesota, Boston College, and Clarkson.
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 Clarkson, like Clarkson Road?
Clarkson University.
Where's that? Is that Tennessee?
Potsdam, New York.
Potsdam, New York. It's not even Clarkson, Tennessee. It's Potsdam, New York.
Indeed.
And we're going to be talking to someone from Wisconsin. Who are we going to be talking to?
We are going to be talking to Mark Johnson, who is the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers women's hockey team.
Former Blue,
and perhaps most notable for his presence on the 1980 Miracle on Ice team. Mark Johnson scored 2 goals in the game against the USSR, was the leading scorer on that team.
Cool. So we're going to have that audio tomorrow, I believe. So we'll take care of that later today and bring that to you tomorrow morning. So when we come back here on Game Time AM, we're going to have the guy behind the Golden Seals documentary talking filmmaking and one of the teams that were part of the 6 expansion teams when the Blues came into the NHL. You're listening to Game Time AM. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt's pushing the buttons. Come back here on 590 The Fan.